Yeah, so we're largely going to be sharing from our church's experience. So God has been gracious at Lighthouse to grow our ministry, and we have been just overwhelmed by God's grace to us in it. And it really is something that is now hardwired into the DNA of who we are as a church. It's just the air we breathe. We just think about this stuff all the time. But there are a lot of things that we're still trying to figure out, and we're not experts by any stretch of the imagination. For many years, our ministry consisted mostly of young families with younger children with disabilities, almost completely autism. And a lot of those young children are no longer young, and many of them have now moved into junior high and high school age. Some of them have graduated high school, are young adults. We have a couple of older adults that we know have disabilities. Some of our older members are starting to experience chronic health issues, right, which require many of the same considerations as younger people with disabilities. So all that to say is we're still figuring things out. This is very much a fluid, dynamic thing, and we're trying to make the wisest call we can to love our families. But if there's anything that you can learn from our mistakes and the things that we wished we had done better and known earlier, if there's anything we can do to help you in your ministries, we would love to share that with you. So just an overview of the seminar. So this session is going to be focusing mostly on like foundations, right? So before you start thinking, well, what are the different events and programs and stuff like that? Like, what are the foundations that should exist within your church, within your leadership team, within the culture of your community that would support this kind of disability ministry? The next seminar block in the afternoon is going to be run by our disability administrator, disability ministry coordinator, May Lapari. And she's going to be sharing more nuts and bolts about what the ministry looked like. So this is like intake and training, communications systems. And so if you're into Excel spreadsheets and mail merge and all that stuff, that's your jam. That's going to be your seminar. And then, of course, you know, if you have questions at all throughout the course of this, we would love to answer them. And if you have answers to any of those questions, if you've seen something that works, we would love to learn from your wisdom as well. And so we want this to be as practical as possible. So in your seminar notes, you'll see a lot of our documentation, our policies and forms. And if at any point you see something and say, hey, I would like a copy of that, so don't have to reinvent the wheel, we happily will send it to you. We would love to share that with you. So I am actually not the pastor who oversees our disability ministry. I help out with a number of other things, but I used to be. So I used to be the pastor that oversees it, they shuffled me along to greener pastures. We put an elder, one of our pastoral elders in charge of the ministry. So Pastor Kelly is here, and how long has it been now? Probably 9 months? Yeah, 9 months. So that baby's been born, and we now have a full-fledged disability pastor. But the reason why I'm sharing this is because previously in the years past when I was overseeing it, this was material that I had prepped for, and so they thought it'd be easier for me to share. But at the end of this, Pastor Kelly will come up and we'll both answer questions, meaning you'll ask questions and I will nod knowingly and hand it off to Kelly because he's much more in the weeds with this stuff. So Pastor Kelly actually is a family that affected by disability. His daughter Piper has autism, and you probably saw her greeting this morning when you came in, and she's just a joy and a delight. And so, yeah, really excited about what God is doing through Pastor Kelly in the disability ministry. Now, as you think about starting a disability ministry, one question that sometimes comes up, almost as like an objection, is what if we don't have anybody in our church that has a disability? Like, are we really kind of, and Kim alluded to this in his plenary, but like, are we really going to start this whole thing for one family? And maybe in your church, there isn't even that one family, right? What good is it to make a ministry for something that doesn't exist in our church? And I hope I don't have to really convince you of the wisdom of it or the need of it. Like Greg shared the statistics in terms of the sheer number of people in our communities that are affected by disability, right? And this kind of, it's just, we see this massive gap between who is out there and who is in our church. And we have to figure out why is there such a discrepancy. And part of the discrepancy is because when they show up, either there is nothing for them or they assume that we have nothing for them. And so part of the brainstorming process for you now, even if you feel like, you know, we're a million miles away from actually supporting a disability ministry, there's no one in our church that experiences disability, having a plan ahead of time is a way to serve those that God would bring. And it's kind of a chicken and the egg thing, right? Like, you know, are they not coming because you don't have anything? Or do you not have anything because they're not coming? And I think that as Christians, one of the things that we do is we take initiative in loving people. We are taking initiative in going out and compelling those to come into our community so we can share the love of Christ with them. And we're reminded that this is all in God's providence and his sovereignty. You have no idea who God is going to bring to you. It wasn't like we said, you know what, now we're ready to start visibility ministry. Come on in, Huberts. They just came. And it prompted us to start thinking about things. And you don't know when that family is going to come. You don't know when that child is going to be born in your family, in the church family that has a disability. So you want to be ready for when God brings that opportunity. So let's say a child with autism visits your church. Maybe they're a relative from out of town. Someone's looking for a church. Right? You don't want to be caught on the back of your heels scrambling, right? Even before that moment, could you have a basic plan, right? Okay, this family comes. Who could we call on to be with this child, to shadow them for today? Who are the individuals that the parents need to meet so they can make a connection with people in the church? What are the next steps that you would want them to take? Like, what's the next step for them as a family? And then what are the next steps for you as a church? What do we do now after we have this? And so if you're thinking about these things and developing a plan, the plan might change, right? But at least you've thought about it and have preemptively begun to think of a way you can love and serve these families. So I wanted to share a little bit about my story of disability ministry, which is really closely tied to the history of disability ministry here at Lighthouse. And so this is me, many, many years younger and many pounds lighter. And so I used to be the youth pastor. I used to be the youth pastor, and in God's weird providence, I'm now doing youth ministry again. But when I was a youth pastor, we were trying to find a missions opportunity for our youth. And we were going down to Mexico and doing stuff there, but there was a period of time where it was really dangerous to go to Mexico. And it was like, you know, I don't know if this is gonna be the wisest thing to do. So we were trying to figure out, like, what's a good option, right? And I was in seminary at the time, and I took a discipleship lab with one of the pastors associated with the seminary that I was at, and didn't know who he was. He was just assigned to us, and his name was Rick McLean. And he is the disability pastor at Grace Community Church up in Sun Valley. And so what he did for us for an entire semester, we would meet with him once a week, and he would just talk to us about disability ministry. And we would go visit, we would do visitations to some of the families that were affected by disability. We visited a school that had a really robust disability program that one of their members was running. And it was just this totally new thing for me that I had never thought about. And he mentioned Johnny and Friends. It's like, I've heard of it before. And I kind of was just looking at their website, and it found out that they had what they call family retreats. And what these are these week-long retreats where an entire family with disability gets to go away, and they're just pampered and taken care of and treated like kings and queens and princes and princesses, and that is their retreat. And what they need are volunteers, like short-term missionaries, to be able to support these families and watch kids and things like that. So I thought, you know, I could do that. And it was in Murrieta, so it was like a short little drive away. It was domestic, you know, all the stuff was taken care of. It was super easy. So we'll do it. So I went out with these three individuals, and that was our first year doing Johnny and Friends. And we came back just completely blown away. Had no idea this was a thing. Had no idea what a blessing would be for us and what a significant need there was in the church. For so many of these families, like, this retreat was like, this is it for them. Like, this is the height of, like, their entire year, because going on vacation for these families is so difficult and so onerous. And to be at a place where their families are welcomed and cared for was huge. And so we just kind of kept going back and going back and going back. So there was kind of this little groundswell within our youth and within my own heart, like, wow, disability ministry is really a thing. And it wasn't like the elders were, like, opposed to it, say, no, we don't care about that at all. But, you know, it just wasn't something they had seen, and they hadn't really experienced it yet, right? And then the Huberts came, and all of a sudden they were confronted with the need right on our front door. And who do we have to be able to serve, you know, in disability ministry? This is the first year. I think this is the last year we ended up going. And we see a lot of youth and a number of some adults. Actually, Sean Matsumoto, I forgot, Sean was there. And I think, yeah, a number of those individuals now are still serving in our disability ministry. So this is May Lapari. She's our disability coordinator. And she must have been maybe a junior in high school. And Justin Lee is making snacks for us right now. This is his sister, Sammy. But I think that so much of the reason why disability is baked into the DNA of our church is because of something like this. We just had an event, you know, we had this opportunity for some, especially young people in our church, to just be exposed to the need and the joy of serving. And it's been such a delight. And so we started the Bridge Ministry after the Huberts came, and we just kind of tried to figure out how we're going to do this thing. And eventually it led to having, I think now we have 13 Bridge kids, and that require one-on-one shadowing whenever they're here. We have 35 volunteers that serve on an average once to twice a month, and they are assigned to different kids. But you know, God has been so gracious and so kind. My wife serves in the ministry, and that is one of her great joys and delights. We're hoping that my kids can kind of grow up helping in this as well. And so disability ministry for us has been just a wonderful journey, and we've just loved it so much. And so I wanted to kind of get into the meat of this now. What time are we supposed to end? Is it 11:30? Is that what it says? All right, we'll see how we do here. I'll try to go through this as quick as I can. So 7 foundations for starting a disability ministry in your church. So again, not thinking nuts and bolts stuff, but just what's the underlying foundations that should be in place as you're moving in this direction? And the first really almost should be without saying is to come before God in humility. Okay, come before God in humility. Psalm 127, 1 and 2 says, unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchman stays awake in vain. It's in vain that you rise up early and go late to rest, eating the bread of anxious toil, for he gives to his beloved sleep. Right? The process of creating anything is completely futile unless we're doing it in dependence upon the Lord. And that's what John was talking about yesterday. We have to go before the Lord and humbly submit our plans to him. If we're walking into disability ministry with a swagger and a self-confidence and a self-assurance and self-reliance, we're doomed to failure. We might get stuff done, but it won't honor the Lord. And so whatever steps you're taking, you want to come before the Lord with an open hand and say, God, I'd like this to do this very much, but it's totally up to you. And so I'm trusting for you to provide the people, the resources, the desire, the support, the families. You have to provide all this stuff, God. And unless you are the one building this house, I will labor in vain. So that's the fundamental thing that is underlying all of this stuff. Now, the second foundation is to clarify your mission. So you need to have a really clearly defined mission for your ministry that will be your guide in decision-making. Right? Disability ministry tends to be very program-oriented, right? What programs can we think of? You know, what is easy to start thinking about the stuff you want to do. So shadowing for us is what we call our program, where like a child comes and they have like a buddy, a shadow that is assigned to them, and it helps them participate in church life and the different things that they're doing. So you think, oh, we do shadowing with them. We could have buddies for them. We have special events. We could do training. We could do all these different things to grow church awareness. But before you start thinking about the specific nuts and bolts things, it has to be clear in your mind and in your church's mind why it is that you're pursuing this particular kind of ministry. Like, what is the actual aim and goal of your ministry, right? And this will help keep you focused in deciding what your ministry actually looks like. Okay, so Lighthouse's Bridge ministry mission is to minister the gospel and connect those with God-designed abilities with the church in the world, right? So we're trying to minister the gospel and form connections, form relationships, right? And that's it, right? That's the sum total of what we're trying to do. And it helps us to clarify what we're willing to put money and resource and time and energy into. Is it actually going to help us minister the gospel? Like what Pastor Kim was talking about this morning, right? We don't want to just provide fun programming. If we're trying to attract people with programming, and we can't outcompete the world, we can't outprogram the world. The world has tons of services and all kinds of things that are way more fun than anything we could possibly provide. The one thing that we can offer that the world cannot is the hope of Jesus Christ. And so every program, every event, everything we're trying to do has to be to that end. And it might be fun, it might be a program, but in the end, is it moving us in the direction of ministering the gospel? Is it helping us to connect people? Like, how can we actively try to form relationships between these families and the rest of the church? How can we heal relationships that exist within the family and the church? So just having that clear mission in mind will automatically take some things off the table and say, you know what, that's a fun idea, but it maybe is not the most important thing to do right now. What's going to help us minister the gospel? How can we get God's word and God's truth in front of these families as quickly and effectively as possible? Yeah, so a clearly defined mission will help you also have clearly defined parameters for your ministry that are scalable and sustainable. And I think this is really important too, as you're starting anything, right? It's better to do one thing really well for a long time than to do 10 things poorly for 3 months. Right, there are a billion great ideas when it comes to disability ministry. Right, where some churches get into trouble is when they try to do all billion of those things right away, all at once. Right, so I'm going to personally disciple every kid once a week. I'm going to open up a coffee shop to hire special needs individuals. We do all this stuff, and those are great ideas. But you have to ask yourself, is it scalable, right? You're going to find out in disability ministry that the demands are significantly high. It is very resource intensive, and the ability to scale things in disability ministry are very challenging. So as things get bigger, right, whatever structure you have, is it going to be able to handle it? As more families come, because they will come, are you going to be able to grow it and sustain it? Can we keep this going, whatever this idea is? Can that be a stable source of hope and ministry for these families? And so for us, like kind of having this mission and this ability and this clear focus in our ministry, it led us to say, like, what we really need to start with is shadowing. That's going to be our bread and butter. That's where we're starting. We're not doing anything else. Because when these families come and they can't even sit in a worship service. They can't get the word of God in front of them. They can't be encouraged by fellowship because their kids are constantly on their minds. And so what can we do to remove that obstacle? We'll talk about that later on. What can we do to remove the obstacle so we can minister the gospel to them? Or we can shadow their kids. So it was like a really clear program that we could offer to help fulfill our mission. And then once we kind of had that locked and loaded, then we can move on to some other stuff. And we'll talk about that later on. So clarify your mission. The next foundation is to cultivate pastoral passion. Just wondering, are there any pastors here? Okay, wonderful. Guys, thanks so much for being here. I'm so encouraged that you guys are in this seminar. And I think for the rest of you, maybe you're wishing that your pastor was here. And this is a really tough thing, right? Where you maybe feel like you have a burden for this. I'm really passionate about this. I'm so on fire for this cause, and I see the need, and I want us as a church to be there, but no one else in my church cares about it. But I want to encourage you to try to figure out, how can I seek support from church leadership? So we want to avoid the situation where disability ministry is kind of this own little thing off in the corner of the church, right? Or it's a torch being carried by just the few individuals who are passionate about it. We're like, you are the disability person, and you're the only person that cares about this and is thinking about it. If there's something that pops up that requires thinking, they always go to you. You're the one person that takes care of this. We want this to be something that is built into the lifeblood of the church. And in most cases, this means having the support of your church leadership, right? And it's not to say that disability ministry can't be done without that full support and without their involvement, but it is such an easier lift when your church leadership is behind it. It allows for greater alignment with the mission of the church. So as we're moving forward as a church, the elders are just having in their mind, how is this affecting our families affected by disability? It's just there. It's not even a question whether or not we'll consider them. It's just built into their mindset. There's a greater chance of church-wide culture building. So your church leadership oftentimes are the ones that are setting the tone for your church and are providing language and putting emphases on things. And if disability ministry is something that they own, then that will necessarily trickle down into the life of the church. It helps with acquiring resources, and we need a lot of resources for this. We need publicity, facilities, funds, volunteers, all the normal stuff that people fight about in church, right? And if your elders are on board with this, your pastors are on board with this, then it just helps to ease the cogs of the machine, so to speak, so that when you need something, you're able to get it. So like as our kids are getting older, one of the things that's really challenging is some of them are physically bigger and they just need more space to be able to kind of cool down. And I don't know if our church building feels big to you. We're starting to feel very cramped in our space and we're kind of running out of places to put people, right? And so what we decided to do was to take a conference room in the front of the church and say, that is just for Bridge. Is it just the morning services? Yeah, and so if our older Bridge kids who normally sit in service need to kind of cool down and kind of hang out for a while, that's their room, And a room is like gold bullion on a Sunday morning. Like that is a rich commodity, right? And the elders were willing to say, no, this is their room, no one else can touch it. And it only happens that way because the elders were on board and completely in line with this vision of disability ministry. Now, you may be thinking, like, that sounds awesome. I would love to have that. But I don't have that. And it's just me, right? So what if it is just you? What if it is you're the only person carrying this torch? I really empathize with you, and I feel for you. But here's some encouragements for you. One is to be patient. Wait on God's timing. You don't know. You don't know what God's timing will be. And he has you maybe in what feels like the bottom of this J curve for however long he will have you. And if it grows your dependence and your faith and your trust and your faithfulness, and that's a good thing. Trust in God's timing. Growth takes years. not just numerical growth, but like the spiritual attitudinal growth to say like this is who we are as a people that love disability ministry. I mean, this is probably, I think that picture of me with my youth at the Johnny and Friends family retreat, I think that was probably 15 years ago now, you know, and it's taken that long for our church to get to where we are. And now we're at the point where, so one of our, there's a, one of our bridge volunteers is having their firstborn daughter in a couple of months. And they, and I asked them recently what they're going to name, if they had any names in mind. And they said they're going to name her Lonnie after one of our bridge kids, because, and you'll hear her, Lonnie, sometimes in our service, because she's the only, we're kind of a quiet Asian church, so, like, someone was clapping yesterday, we were joking, said, oh, they didn't get the memo, we don't do that here, no, I'm just kidding, we love the feedback, but our church tends to be very, very quiet, and, except for Lonnie, and whenever someone prays, and the, whoever prays says amen, she is the only person in the congregation who will say amen as loudly enough for everyone else to hear, and I was talking to Ryan about this. He says, I hope that my daughter will say amen as loudly as Lonnie does when she comes to know the Lord. And, you know, just like, where does that come from? It's just time. Time with people, time with these families, and it will bear fruit. We just have to be patient. We have to be gracious. It's easy when you're in a position where it's just, you just feel like it's you, to feel like to grow in resentment and bitterness. Like, how come no one else cares about this stuff? Are my pastors even Christians, right? Do they care at all about loving the least of these? And we have to be gracious, right? None of us come into the world perfectly understanding and loving disability ministry. We're all products of grace, right? We didn't know everything we used to know, or we don't know everything now that we didn't always know now. You don't understand what I'm saying. Anyway, yeah. So speaking of extending grace, so you need to extend that same grace to your leadership too. You don't know what they're going through, and there are a lot of burdens they're trying to bear. And speaking as a pastor, there's an infinite number of good things that people are asking us to think about. And it's not that we're trying to say that your idea is a bad one. It's just, wow, there's just so many things to balance. And we appreciate your graciousness as you're kind of walking with us. You want to be submissive. You're called to submit to your church leadership. So you don't want to badmouth your church leadership or start creating like your own like disability faction over here. And like it's always complaining about why the leadership doesn't do anything. You may not know the whole story, right, about why it is that you are where you are in your church leadership story and why disability is not more important. You just don't know. So just, but you want to be submissive. Doesn't mean you can't, you shouldn't talk to them about it, but just be submissive. You can include leadership in opportunities to love those with disabilities. So one way to kind of get them to catch the vision for this is how can they just have that connection and relationship with families affected by disability? We had an intern once from Germany that was starting, trying to get disability ministry off the ground in her church. And her idea was to ask the elders to shadow, you know, their kids. So, oh, you're off this Sunday? Great. Can you come and hang out with Timmy, right? And I thought that was such a great way to try to see, have the elders see firsthand, this is a really significant thing, not just the need, but the blessing. And they wanted, and they'll be able to share that blessing with the rest of the church. You could invite a disability family and a pastor's family over for dinner. You know, not in some kind of like bait and switch kind of thing, but just for them to spend time with one another so they can see what these families are like. And lastly, you can disciple others to support the needs of those with disability. Right? Sometimes what happens is someone says, I really want to care for these families. And all of a sudden you become the one person that does it every week, forever, for the rest of your life, right? And you feel like you can't take a vacation because, you know, who's going to take care of this family? You can't, you know, and you're at the drop of a hat, you're there all the time, and it's just not sustainable, and it's not wise, and it's not humble to recognize your limits, and it's, you're not sharing the grace of this ministry with others. So who could you disciple to support the needs of those with disability, right? Who could you bring along, right? Is there a youth that in your life that is just, you know, that, I mean, they're sitting in service, then they're checked out anyway, right? They're on their phone, they're drawing in their notes. Like, well, instead of you having just this young person just sitting and thinking about themselves all the time, let's actually give them a chance to consider another person better than themselves and experience the grace of being humble and serving others. And God can do incredible things through that. Are there college students that you can ask to come alongside you? Parents that really understand dynamics with young kids? Are there people with professional training or experience? So I feel like you can't swing a dead cat at Lifehouse without hitting an occupational therapist or a physical therapist or behavior therapist. It's just one of the providences and stewardships that God has given to us as a church, that we have people with professional training. And so we go to them and say, hey, would you be willing to hang out with this kid? I know you do this 5 other days out of the week, but you're really good at it, and this is a gift that God has given you. It'd be wonderful. So cultivate pastoral passion. Next is to create a church-wide culture of love for disability. So we don't want this to be the siloed thing where only a certain number of people kind of are caring about this thing. We want this to be part of the DNA of the church. And so here's a few ways that we've done this. They've been helpful for us. None of them is a silver bullet, but it is just kind of this atmosphere that is just kind of in the air of everything that we're doing. Preach on it from the pulpit. Encourage your pastors to preach on it from the pulpit. If you are a pastor, preach on this from the pulpit. One Sunday in January every year is our Disability Sunday. And we preach on disability. We invite families with disability to come. We recruit heavily for volunteering purposes. We highlight the grace of the disability ministry in our church. And we just want to put it front and center. When we do application in our sermons, right, we're regularly thinking, well, how would this affect someone with disability, right? How could we speak to their needs, their suffering, their hope? We want this to just be out there. And pastors have this unique, weird privilege of getting to say some pretty incredible things. And we have a limited number of words we can say in a sermon. And one of the wisest things we can do as pastors is to be able to dedicate some of them to people affected by disability. I think it's just necessary and a huge grace. We pray publicly for those affected by disability. As we pray publicly, we're teaching our people what is important to God. And so our prayers can shape the culture. We want to push for wise integration. If the church is to love these families, they have to be part of the church. And in order for them to be part of the church, they have to be as fully integrated into the life of the church as possible. We want our families to participate fully in the life of the church in whatever ways are most appropriate for them. And so maybe in previous iterations of disability ministry, what just happened was you just had a disability room or something where, for lack of a better word, you kind of just throw them in there and just kind of hope for the best. And they're kind of squirreled away and kind of hidden, kind of like the downstairs people in Downton Abbey, right? They're just there, but you don't really see them. And that's really not what we want. We want these families and these individuals to be fully integrated into our church. And it's really different because every family is different. Every child is different. But for us, what that means is we mainstream our kids into children's ministries and youth group. And as they age out of those ministries, they actually participate in worship service as much as they can. And this is kind of like, this is a general statement that we're trying to do this. We mainstream them and we're trying to have them participate as much as they can. But it is really individual. Every individual is different. Some of our kids with disability don't need a shadow at all. Like, you wouldn't really know that they have a disability unless someone told you. Other ones, they definitely need a shadow. And so we'll talk this afternoon about how you assess that. How do you do intake and figure out, try to strategize what the best care plan is going to be for a family. But you just have to realize that this is a flexible thing. And so for our older kids who are now participating in service, like Lonnie is able to sit through a service and take notes and, you know, with some help and some direction. She'll get up every now and then and kind of wander around. Greg's youngest son, Tate, is definitely not able to sit through a service. You may have heard him in the morning session during the music time because he loves music and he's very vocal and he's a big boy he jumps and runs. And so you will definitely notice him when he's there, but he can stay for music. And then during the preaching, non-musical portions of the service, he can kind of duck away into our kind of cool down room where he can kind of hang out. And there's another, you know, young man named Evan who's kind of in a similar situation. And so we're just kind of playing this stuff by ear and trying to figure out how to love people individually where they are. Things, when you go this route of trying to integrate people fully, things go really unexpectedly often. I was preaching one Sunday and this young man named Evan came up on stage and ran behind me and started dancing in the background. And I knew Evan. I knew he wasn't going to do anything. But as a pastor, you got to figure out, like, what do I do now? You know. And so his shadow came and got him and stuff like that. But there was a shepherding moment for me as a pastor to tell the church, you know, we all understand, like, this is what happens in a family, right? Things like this happen, right? This is not a disruption. This is not a bad thing. This is our church. Welcome to Lighthouse, right? So for children's ministries, there are different things we do to try to accommodate and adjust curriculum and have, you know, ways of making these accessible as possible for our kids. Maybe we'll talk more about that this afternoon. So wise integration, provide opportunities for the whole church to love those affected by disability, right? Is there a next step that the church members in your church can take just move a little closer to loving these families. Just one step, whatever that next step is. I think you can think about short-term, low-commitment opportunities. So some examples here would be like one-time respite help. So shadowing is one of our ministries. Respite is the other part of our ministry, which is where about once a month, actually, what's the frequency now on respite? Quarterly now? Yeah. So quarterly, what we'll do is we'll have an evening at church where parents can drop their kids off, and we'll have volunteers here who will care for those kids for a couple hours. And the parents can go off and do whatever. They can go on a date, they can run errands, they can do laundry, they can pass out in the parking lot and just take a nap, whatever they want to do, and we just want to support them. And so the respite for us is, because it's quarterly, right, that's a one-time thing you can ask someone to participate in. Hey, would you mind coming just for this one thing? You're not signing up for life, just come to this one thing. Maybe you can encourage someone to share a meal, right? Like, is there a family that you can bless, but just bring a meal to them because meal prep is hard. Johnny and Friends family retreats are wonderful as a kind of like a really intensive, like all-in kind of thing, but it's short-term, it's very easy. Visitation, could you just get some friends together and say, hey, we just want to go spend time with this family and get to know them, right? You don't have to call it disability ministry, but just there's this family here. We just want to love them and visit them. And then you can think about longer term, higher commitment opportunities, right? Is there a next step that someone could take to say, well, is this something that you would be, would shadowing be something you'd be willing to do once a month, every other week or something like that? Training counselors in your church to be sensitive to those that are experiencing disability. People who are discipling. With that sensitivity. So we want to create a church-wide culture of love for disability. The next foundation is to clear away obstacles. All right, so what are the obstacles that individuals and families with disability experience that may hinder the gospel? So it's great to think about, like, you know, kind of what Pastor Kim was talking about, like, you know, removing idols, helping them to see the sufficiency of Christ and the power of the gospel through the truth of God's word. All that is wonderful, but for so many of these families, there's so many obstacles to stand in the way of them even hearing that message, that you could have all the right theology and right counseling perspective in the world, but if they're not going to walk through your doors of your church, if they don't know anybody who can tell them this, if they don't have time in their schedule to hear this, then, you know, it's kind of fruitless. So there are all these kinds of obstacles that we have to think about. How can we remove them? So developmental obstacles, right? So many of these individuals, they're developmentally delayed, and they're just not going to be able to understand everything that we're communicating the way we would normally communicate it to a typical audience. So how can we adapt our curriculum and programming to allow an individual to best participate, right? And that's, again, an individual thing that we're constantly evaluating, and May will talk about that this afternoon. Are there physical obstacles? So something as simple as, like, is there a way for someone in a wheelchair to get into your church? Maybe your church is 1,000 years old, right? And it was just they're just stairs, right? But maybe you don't have to invest in a huge capital campaign to cut a ramp into the curb. But, you know, have you thought, well, could we just have a temporary ramp that we could move in and out in case someone showed up and needed some accessibility help? Is there someone with sensory issues, right? Are some of these students are some people are just really sensitive to loud noises, right? Is there a way that we can help them? Kind of take down the volume, sometimes figuratively, sometimes literally, in the, what they're experiencing. Can we have, like, headphones, you know, noise dampening headphones that would help them to be a little bit less sensory overloaded? You know, are there places where they can be where things are a little bit quieter? So are there physical obstacles, right, that are making it difficult for these families to participate? Are there relational obstacles? And this speaks to a lot of the experience that you've already heard of in terms of the difficulty and the apprehension that so many of these churches, these families feel in just even thinking about participating in a Christian life, right? Just, I don't want to impose. I don't know where to go. I feel like I'm not welcome. I don't want to be a burden to anybody. And so what we can do is remove those relational obstacles. How can we pursue these families and make it crystal clear to them that we want them here, right? Personally inviting them, right? So one of the things we do whenever we have kind of these big church events, like an all-church retreat, right, where it's a big production to kind of move our whole church off-site to a retreat facility that we don't even have full control over, but we want these families there, so we will personally invite them. We'll call them and say, hey, you need to come to this retreat. You absolutely need to come. What do you need? We will make it happen. You know, your child likes to walk around in the middle of the night you know, and you need someone to walk with them, no problem. I know some completely nocturnal college students that will completely do that. Inviting families into others' homes is another way to do this. Like you've heard of just the power of just being invited into a home. And this is something that my family experienced not that long ago. So Greg's family came over, and it had been years since they'd been over, and to our shame. And Tate, you heard that Tate and Tyler love to do puzzles, and Tate is amazing at doing puzzles, like a true savant. And what he'll do is he will do the puzzle and rip off the picture and then kind of crumple it up, and then he'll just reassemble it again without the picture, just completely on shape alone. And no idea how he does this. And he comes over, and so we pull out some puzzles for him, just our personal puzzles, right? And he starts ripping the pictures off, right? And you can see my oldest daughter, who's very much type A controlled, you know, those like things being tidy, just like, oh, please don't do that. And so it was a wonderful opportunity for us to kind of remove that relational obstacle, say, you know, like, this is how we're going to serve them. Also, next time, we're going to buy Tate his own puzzles, right? Do these families feel welcome, you know, in our homes, in our small groups, in our community groups? We need to make sure that we're extending just the greatest of welcomes to these families. Are there time obstacles, right? Families may not feel as if they have the time to really invest into spiritual care. All their time is spent caring for their children, trying to logistically do all these different things. And honestly, even with typical children, that's the way we are sometimes. So how can we create that time for them, right? So respite nights are great, providing childcare, things like that. So we want to clear away obstacles. Next is to create clear systems to support the work of ministry. And so now this is kind of getting into more of the administrative realm, but I think you do have to have a leader in place, right? It's wonderful when it's just kind of like an amorphous blob, you know, kind of just like loving people organically. That's awesome, right? But at some point, it really is helpful for someone to say, I own this thing, and I'm going to make the call, right? I'm going to weigh everyone's decision considerations, but I'm going to really set the agenda here and move us forward, and it's really helpful. And it says a lot, to our church that we're willing to take one of our elders, a very busy, gifted elder who could be doing a lot of things, right, and say, you know, we have an elder that's going to oversee this, and this is how important it is to us. So not only do you want to have a leader in place, you want to have a team in place. You can't superhero your way through disability ministry, and you need to have a team in place. I think we'll talk a little bit more this afternoon about who our team is and what roles they function. We have people who take care of communications. We have people who take care of intake and scheduling. And we have people who take care of, kind of caring for families. And so there's all manner of different people whose gifts we need in order to make this thing work. You need to have a process for taking in new families and individuals. We'll walk through that this afternoon. But they show up at your church, like, what's their next step? What information do we need to get from them? How do we document that stuff, hold on to it in a secure way? Who do we share it with? How do we share it with them? You need to have a process for recruiting and training new volunteers because we just need more and more volunteers all the time. And we just have to have these pipelines where it's really the line between someone saying, you know, I'm kind of interested in disability ministry, to them actually getting a chance to help. That needs to be as short as possible. Because if they just say it out into the ether and no one follows up with them, they don't know what the next step is to take, then that's kind of a missed opportunity for them to experience that grace. So we try to have a process to walk people through pretty quickly to get onboarded. You need to have a system for scheduling and communication. So how are you going to communicate with your volunteers, with your families? How do you make sure that things are not double booked and people have any information that they need? You need to have clear publicity and documentation on your website or whatever communication tools you have that people might be looking at to figure out whether your church is suitable for their family. So even if it's just a thing in your ministry subheading in your website that says, we have a disability ministry, contact us for more information, or just saying that it's there speaks a lot to a church and can make or break a family's decision to show up on a Sunday or not. So have clear systems. And the last foundation is to come alongside individuals and families in discipleship and counseling, right? And this is really the meat of it. Like, we want to make disciples. We want to minister the gospel. Everything else, all the other programs and stuff like that is just the trellis that supports the vine of discipleship. And so this is really what we're moving towards. If we're not giving them Christ, if we're not giving them the gospel, then it's all for nothing. They might as well go to the world. So we have to do all the stuff for the purpose of helping them to walk in the pathways of grace, right? We wanted them to be able to experience the gospel in all these different facets of life. We do think that counseling is a big part of this. And so, I don't know, maybe you made a mistake coming to this one and not going to the counseling one. Counseling has been such a huge difference for our church and our families. I think some of the things that come up frequently that families need to grow in and we need to grow in is, right, having a theology of disability, right? This is not an accident, right? This falls under the realm of God's meticulous, loving sovereignty. Their family is not an accident. This is not a punishment, right? And that's a theological issue that they need to be taught in and discipled in. They need to have a theology of suffering. The suffering is not meaningless. It is not pointless. It is not a punishment. It is one of the acts of grace that God is working in their lives so that he can produce something good in them and draw them close to him. We need to protect marriages, right? You've heard from Dan and Vera Christian in their testimony, the devastating toll that disability plays on marriages sometimes, and we want to protect them, and we want to offer them true hope. You think about typical siblings, right, that are angry and stressed and depressed because they feel like they've been neglected and are always at the beck and call of this other, their disabled sibling, right? So you can think of all these different suffering, counseling, sin issues that are emerging in these families, and who else is going to give them hope? It has to be us. It has to be the church. It has to be our ministries. And so I realize that this is pretty high-level stuff. There's probably a lot more that could be said. Hopefully that's just a helpful push off for the ball to get rolling down the hill a little bit.